Fortunately, there is another possibility. An important theme in Walden too is that political action is to be avoided. Historians have stopped writing about wars and conquering heroes and empires, and what they have turned to instead, though far less dramatic, is far more important. The great cultural revolutions have not started with politics. The great men who are said to have made a difference in human affairs, Confucius, Buddha, Jesus, the scholars and scientists of the revival of learning, the leaders of the Enlightenment, Marx, were not political leaders. They did not change history by running for office. We need not aspire to their eminence in order to profit from their example. B.F. Skinner, Walden 2 Revisited, in Walden 2. Skinner devotes this passage to arguing that the great cultural revolution we need will not come about through political action. The syllogistic quality of this passage is not immediately evident. Looking at the last paragraph, however, it becomes clear that Skinner's argument hinges on his effort to carve out and dissociate two different categories of individuals, the great men of history, G, and the political leaders, P. We can draw these sets as follows. One circle, called G, separate circle, P. He then goes on to suggest that all successful revolutions, S, have been inspired by the great men of history, which we can add to the drawing as follows. Circle S inside G next to circle P. And without adding anything further, we see that we are entitled to draw the inference that no successful revolution has been inspired by political leaders. In other words, what we have is the following syllogism. 1. No great men are political. 2. All successful revolutions are inspired by great men. 3. Therefore, no successful revolutions are political. This is a valid syllogism that conforms to the pattern of Solarent, as seen earlier. 1. No dogs have wings. Middle predicate. 2. All poodles are dogs. Subject middle. 3. Therefore no poodles have wings. Subject predicate. If the premises are true, then the conclusion has to be true. While our syllogistic reconstruction of Skinner's argument greatly simplifies the passage, it is nevertheless very useful for two reasons. First of all, it helps us understand what Skinner is saying. Naturally, there may be some disagreement over exactly how to interpret the passage as a whole. Nevertheless, our interpretation is defensible and crystallizes Skinner's point. Second, reconstructing the argument syllogistically puts us in a good position to evaluate it. Some might object to premise one by presenting examples of great men of history who were political leaders. Or they might object that the great men Skinner himself names were in fact political leaders. Others might accept premise one while rejecting premise two. They might argue that successful revolutions are inspired not by great men, but by advances in technology or by God. We could go on at length about the many interesting things that could be said both for and against the premises. For present purposes, however, the important thing to see is how Aristotle's theory of the syllogism got us started. It provided a reliable framework for organizing our analysis of Skinner's argument. Syllogisms will not leap off the page at you. You have to dig a bit for associations and disassociations in the author's reasoning. With practice, you can recognize the patterns more easily. Ultimately, though, the crucial importance of Aristotle's theory of the syllogism is transitivity. When all else fails, you can almost always find the familiar chain. 1. X is Y. 2. Y is Z. 3. Therefore, X is Z. In the end, that's all Skinner's argument amounts to. Successful revolutions are inspired by great men, and great men are not political. Therefore, successful revolutions are not political. Nothing fancy needed, but being able to identify and avoid errors in transitivity is the foundation of critical thinking. Five common errors in syllogistic reasoning. Although syllogistic reasoning comes naturally to human beings, we are also prone to certain syllogistic errors, sometimes called fallacies. A fallacy is any mistake in reasoning. Since you can't avoid them if you don't know about them, we will pause here to go over the top five. 1. Undistributed middle. In this fallacy, neither of the premises accounts for all members of the category described by the middle term. As a result, the middle term fails to link the subject and predicate term. For example, suppose you meet a man named Jerry at a cocktail party. When he takes a swig of his drink, his jacket comes open a bit and you notice he's wearing a gun in a shoulder holster. The following reasoning might flash through your mind. 1. All undercover cops carry a gun. 2. Jerry carries a gun. 3. Therefore, Jerry is an undercover cop. Later, you might tell a friend that there was an undercover cop at the party. Looking at the reasoning laid out in standard form, however, it becomes evident that your conclusion does not follow from your premises. As mentioned above, the conclusion always determines which terms will be considered the overriding subject and predicate for the syllogism. So we know that Jerry is the subject of this syllogism, and is an undercover cop is the predicate. Copying this designation into the premises, we can label the argument as follows. 1. Predicate middle. 2. Subject middle. 3. Therefore, subject predicate. The term carries a gun is the middle term because it is supposed to be the disappearing bridge, but in this case it fails to do the job. This pattern of reasoning will always be invalid. If you tried to draw a diagram for it, you would see the problem immediately. The first premise can be represented like this. Circle U inside circle G. It tells you that the set of undercover cops is a subset of the set of gun carriers. But how will you add the second premise? It tells you Jerry is a one-member subset of the set of gun carriers. So you know a circle labeled J must be inserted in G. But you don't know whether the circle labeled J should go inside or outside circle U. The conclusion of the argument unjustifiably assumes that J should go inside U, and that's why the argument is invalid. The technical way to put the point is that the middle term is not distributed. A term is considered distributed when all individual members of the category it describes are accounted for. Our cop syllogism commits the fallacy of the undistributed middle because it does not give us an account of all of the members of the category gun carrier. In order to make the argument valid, the first premise would have to say, only undercover cops carry a gun. In other words, it would need to reverse the middle term and the predicate as follows. All gun carriers are undercover cops. This would give us a full account of the middle term because it would tell us that the set of gun carriers is a subset of the set of undercover cops. Then the fact that Jerry was a member of the set of gun carriers would necessarily land him in the set of undercover cops. But then, of course, the first premise would be false because it simply isn't true that all gun carriers are undercover cops. 2. Illicit treatment of the predicate term. In this fallacy, the premise containing the syllogism's predicate term fails to account for all the members of the category which that predicate term describes. Consider the following example. 1. All police officers are brave. Middle predicate. 2. No criminals are police officers. Subject middle. 3. Therefore, no criminals are brave. Subject predicate. The second premise of this argument dissociates the set of criminals from the set of police officers. But we cannot be sure whether or not the set of criminals lies outside the category described by the predicate term brave. If you tried to draw a diagram for this argument, you would begin with the first premise as follows. Circle P inside circle B. The second premise instructs you to draw a circle outside of circle P for the set of criminals, circle C. But should circle C go inside or outside of B? We don't know. The conclusion unjustifiably assumes it should go outside of circle B, and this is why the conclusion does not follow. 3. Illicit treatment of the subject term. In this fallacy, the same problem we saw earlier occurs in the premise containing the syllogism subject term. Consider the following example. 1. All criminals are dangerous. Middle predicate. 2. All criminals are interesting. Middle predicate. 3. Therefore, all interesting people are dangerous. Subject predicate. The first premise tells us the set of criminals is a subset of the set of dangerous people. We could draw this as circle C is inside circle D. The second premise tells us the set of criminals is also a subset of the set of interesting people. We could draw this as follows. Dotted circle I overlaps circle D, and both contain circle C. But the conclusion of the syllogism tells us that the circle for I is supposed to be entirely contained within the circle for D. This is something that the premises did not guarantee. Hence, the conclusion makes an invalid inference. 4. Exclusive premises. In this fallacy, both premises are negative. As a result, no link is established between the subject and predicate terms. Consider the following example. 1. No dangerous people are invited to the party. Predicate middle. 2. Some people who are invited to the party are not spies. Middle subject. 3. Therefore, some spies are not dangerous people. Subject predicate. It is obvious at a glance that there are just too many negatives in this line of reasoning. Hopefully, you'll never run into such an awkward argument. The problem with the inference is once again proven in the diagram. The first premise tells us that the set of dangerous people does not intersect with the set of people invited to the party. We can draw this as follows. Circle D is separate from circle I. The second premise tells us the set of people invited to the party is not a subset of the set of spies. It is tempting to add a circle for spies that partially intersects with I. Circle D is separate from circle I, but dotted circle S overlaps circle I. This diagram does imply the conclusion that some spies are not dangerous people. Nevertheless, the second premise gives us no justification for drawing circle S as we did. Although the second premise asserts that some spies are not invited to the party, it does not assert that some are. The assertion that some spies are not invited to the party is consistent with the assertion that no spies are invited to the party. Recall our discussion of the unfriendly armadillo earlier. So it is possible that circle S is actually a subset of the set of dangerous people. In other words, we could just as easily add the second premise as follows. Circle D is separate from circle I. Dotted circle S is inside circle D. In this case, the conclusion would be false. Recall that according to the definition of validity, an argument is valid if and only if there is no possible way for the premises to be true while the conclusion is false. We have found a way to make the premises true while the conclusion is false, therefore the argument is invalid. 5. Affirmative from a negative. In this fallacy, the conclusion attempts to draw an affirmative conclusion from a negative premise. For example, 1. No spies are honorable. Subject middle. 2. No honorable people deserve to be shot. Middle predicate. 3. Therefore, all spies deserve to be shot. Subject predicate. The first premise tells us that the set of spies does not intersect with the set of honorable people. We can draw this as follows. circle S is separate from circle H.